on the creative days.
We're very happy to be with you. It's good to see faces that we haven't seen for a long time. We bring you the Christian love and greetings of the brethren in Columbus, Ohio. They voted to send their Christian love to you, and especially Sister Peg. She'd like to be with us, but she wasn't able to come along. What we'd like to discuss with you today is the assigned subject, the seven creative days. We would like to discuss its relationship, number one, to the scriptural account, both physical and symbolic. The seven creative days in their span, and also their relationship to universal creation, the creation of the universe. And the three basic lessons that we learn from creation. One, order and periodicity. Two, the lesson of time. And three, the lessons from light and life, both symbolic and real. We would like to compare with you the finite to the infinite. I'm not an astronomer, but I am a microscopist. And so I would like to show you some of the things that we see in the micro world, the things in the finite that look just like the nebulae that we see at the end of the telescope. So we're going to compare the world of the telescope to the world of the microscope, and relate that to lessons in creation and lessons related to the plant. Let's prepare the projector, please. If I should drop my voice in the course of the discourse, just raise your hand and I will. Okay, may we have the lights out, please? Now, in Genesis 1, it starts with, in the beginning. That was a different beginning from the beginning of the universe. If you're having trouble seeing back there, why don't you move on up? There are empty seats up here in the front row. This picture represents the astronomer's concept of the original explosion of energy that started the expanding universe. They date this to 2 million years ago. Now, I'd like to point out to you that in the study of time relative to creation, there are three basic time clocks that are used. One of them is the geologist time clock. The second is the radioactive time clock or carbon dating system. And the third, of course, is the biblical time clock. However, in recent years, the geologists, of course, lean toward the idea of evolution. But in 1913, an investigator discovered an error in the calculations of Einstein and realized that the theory of relativity and Einstein's concepts of the universe opened up a concept of an expanding universe starting with an origin. This was announced at a scientific meeting in 1914. Now, this is very significant, I think. This theory is compatible with the concepts that we learn from the biblical account of creation. except for time. And we would understand their difference in time. The other thing is that the same year, 1914, a man by the name of Bohr, a physicist, espoused the theory of the atom. He explained the theory of atomic energy, and that was the basis for nuclear energy today. So the Lord here, the same year, the ending of Gentile times, announced two great concepts. One was what they call the Big Bang theory of the universe, the expanding universe, the oscillating universe, and also the concept of the atom. The world has never been the same since they discovered what the atom was all about. And it may be their demise, it may lead to their destruction. Now, with an electron microscope, we can see molecules. With a telescope, of course, we can see nebulae and galaxies. And this order from the finite to the infinite is the same. And the same laws and the same principles govern them all. And the distances, the relative distances under the microscope are the same as the relative distances in the heavens. The one thing about this theory that was difficult for the scientists to swallow was it destroyed the idea of evolution. It points to a point in time when a superintelligence had to start creating. And they say we can't accept that because it points to a creator. But mathematically, they were forced to accept it. And also, because of what they were able to see with the Palomar telescope, they were able to measure the red shifts in the planets and the energy. And that's the other point we want to make, that light is one of the major tools, wave energy and light. Light is composed of wave energy and particles. And light has been the key to unlock the universe. Newton and Einstein used light to unlock the universe, just like the Einstein in the religious world, Russell, unlocked the Bible with light, the light of truth. And that's what we want to compare today. Okay, the next slide. This slide is the Crab Nebula. And it's one of the results of that major expanse. And this nebula, these has all these stars around it. They have thousands and millions of stars around them. And of course, they're light years away. A light year is 6 trillion miles. The next slide, please. This is the Trifid Nebula. And you notice these thousands and thousands of stars that surround this. They diminish, they dwarf our universe. The next slide, please. This is the Rosette Nebula. Look at the stars surrounding this nebula. It's just unbelievable. And we want to get across to you that this is energy. This is light, but it is energy. Now, some may have a trouble realizing what energy really is and how you define it. But one way you could define it is a 2-year-old boy at an airport terminal with a lot of rambunction. That's energy. And this light is the same way. It has power. The next slide, please. This represents the Earth now in a gaseous state. At one time, apparently, the Earth was just pure gas. The next slide, please. And then the gas began to cool. Now, I'd like to point out that the Earth is in a magnetic field, as well as other involved with other forces. And as the gas began to cool, the various rings began to form around the Earth, different gaseous rings. Next slide, please. And as the temperature of the Earth dropped, the heavier elements began to precipitate out. And finally, a material substance or matter existed. But keep in mind, even though matter is solid, it is energy. It is in motion, the same as the photons coming off of those lamps. It's all energy. That's the universe. It's just in different form. We are bundles of energy. We're just in a different form, you see. Okay, the next slide, please. This represents the seven periods of creation. Seven, we call them seven creative days. Now, next slide, please. Now, according to our understanding of the Bible time clock, that we can calculate these seven creative days, each of these days to be 7,000 years. Now, an astronomer, when he looks at the universe, he thinks in terms of millions of years. Why does he think in terms of millions of years? Because he concludes that when, for a given reaction to take place, it has to happen so many thousands and hundred thousands of times before it actually occurs. It's like flipping a coin in the air. And if you flip it often enough, you'll get heads. The first time you flip it, it's 50% chance of getting a head. But if you keep flipping it, you know, you have more and more chance of a head coming up. Now, the scientist says, the evolutionist says, in order for creative life, life as we know it, organic life, reactions would have to recur and reoccur and reoccur and reoccur thousands of times. So that takes a long time. So when you talk to an evolution about 7,000 years in a creative day, he'd tell you you have rocks in your head. But you see, we can conclude that this short period of time, from the scriptures, of course, but also from the fact that we believe in a creator. And he didn't have to flip the coin all those times before he did it. He did it, and it only took him that long to do it. And so, we understand, of course, from the length of the seventh day, from the scriptures, that day was 7,000 years. And so, consequently, we deduce that the rest of the seven creative days were 7,000 years. The first day was light. God said, "Let there be light." The next slide, please. And there was light. This energy began to come through these gaseous clouds and rings that existed. This is not sunlight, this is light. That was the first day. In James 3:17, we read that God is light. Have you ever thought about that? That God is light. Or in other words, God is energy. He is the Father of lights. He is the Father of energy. And it was through the scriptures that we understood that this light is not only physical light, but it is life. We will discuss more about that later. The next slide, please. Now, in day two, God separated the waters of the earth and the firmament. In other words, he made a water ring around the earth. And in the firmament, there he called the heavens. The waters above and the waters below. Between that, he called the heavens. The next slide, please. And then on day three, He separated the waters and the land. He made the earth and he established the boundaries of the sea. The earth is 4/5 water. The next slide, please. This is the sun. On the fourth day, God then made two lights, a greater light, the sun, which ruled the earth by day. And then he made the lesser light. The next slide, please. The lesser light, the moon, which ruled the earth by night. The moonlight is related to the sun. It is the reflected sunlight it is a reflected sunlight which comes back to the earth. You notice that the moon has two parts. There's two sides to the moon, the dark side and the light side. Man has never seen the dark side of the moon until the seventh day, the millennial day that we live in. The Jews, the moon represented the law to the Jew. The Jews only saw one side of the law. But in this seventh day, the Jews are going to see the other side of the law, the spiritual side of it also. The spirit of the law as well as the letter. Man has physically seen the opposite side of the moon in the day in which we're living. The sunlight, of course, the sun in Revelation 12 symbolizes the gospel. The gospel light of truth. Very appropriate, because through the gospel we receive light. We receive energy. Okay. The next slide, please. It was on the fifth day that God brought forth the creations in the water and the fowl of the air. And then on the sixth day, next slide please, he created the first pair. At the end of the sixth day, the first parents were created. Genesis 2:22. What did he say? You know, in all of the previous creative days, God said, let the earth bring forth, let the sea bring forth, let the air bring forth. And the scientist speaks of that as spontaneous generation. Because the elements were there, and all that was required was the right combination of elements to have that generation. But when he came to man, is recorded in the second chapter of Genesis, the 22nd verse. Let us make man. It was a very definite positive creation, an intelligent organization of those elements. The next slide, please. And then was the seventh day. The seventh day, seventh is the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Because the seventh day was the day in which they would learn the exceeding sinfulness of sin and then learn righteousness. It was made for man. But we are told in Luke 6:5 and Mark 2:27-28 that the Lord is the Lord of the Sabbath. So God turned everything over to the Logos and he rested. He left it in the hands of the Logos and universal law. The next slide, please. Now, it's because of our understanding of the plan of the ages, as the Scriptures opens it up, that we came to an understanding of the creative days. And the order and periodicity involved in God's arrangements for mankind. This was exemplified in the prophecy in Ezekiel 10, where he speaks about the wheels within the wheels, and that on the wheels were the four faces, the face of a man, the face of a lion, the face of an eagle, and the face of a cherub. These represented the four attributes of God, and we think the wheels represented the time frame, the periods of time in God's plan. In other words, order and periodicity is God's arrangement. The time we understand from scriptural chronology. And God is a very specific timekeeper. He had determined that by the end of 7 days and the beginning of the eighth day, that the earth would be perfected and righteousness would be established in the earth. We are still living in the seven creative days. We see evidences of that. The increase in earthquakes, the changes in international weather patterns, all of these relate to the earth still in process of creation and preparation for the full completion at the end of the seventh day. Also, we learn from this light. Not only physical light, how God used energy and uses energy still, but that light of truth, the special light of truth. That light, it was through that light of truth that we were begotten. And that's the energy that illuminates our minds and helps us to understand not only the creative days, but the creation of the universe. It is this light that opened our eyes. And just as we mentioned earlier, it was light, the secrets of light, that opened up the ideas about the universe. And so it has been the light of truth that has opened up the Bible. The next slide, please. It is this light, physical and symbolic, literal light, acting upon four elements: carbon, oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrogen. Four simple elements with water, which is a combination of two of those elements, oxygen and hydrogen. They combined form over 99% of all living matter. Only four elements. See how God, simple God works. Light acting upon this living matter, like vegetation. The next slide, please. Next slide. Light acting upon the vegetation brings forth organic molecules, which are food for living matter. And as animals, we use this food for support. We are totally dependent upon the life of the light of the sun, but also for our natural life. But as new creatures, we are totally dependent upon the symbolic light, the light of truth. You remember how Peter states it in 1 Peter 1:4, by these exceeding great and precious promises, by this light of truth, we become partakers of the divine nature. The next slide, please. This is some more vegetation. You know, what's interesting to me is that light has no weight, has no mass, but when it interacts with these four elements in vegetation,
It creates mass. It creates matter. Next slide, please. This is an artist's conception of the living cell. This is the nucleus of the cell, what we call the nucleus, the brain of the cell. It's composed of nucleic acids. This is the nucleolus, and this is another type of nucleic acid, a ribonucleic acid, which is used for communicating in the cell. The cell is like a complete factory. The central processing center of the cell sends a message out here to this membrane. This membrane is the outer membrane, just enfolded like a bunch of cellophane. And it sends a message out here, and it tells and instructs the particles on the membrane called ribosomes, these rough edges, they're sites of protein manufacture. So it instructs this cell what proteins to build. These ribosomes send the message to the chemical plant called the Golgi apparatus. And the Golgi apparatus builds the chemicals they need, packages those chemicals, and sends them back. These are called mitochondria, these little banana-shaped things, oblong-shaped things with membrane. These are the energy packets of the cell. They convert energy within the cell. These are microvilli on the cell surface, which increase or decrease depending upon how much foodstuffs the cell needs to absorb from its environment. These cilia-like projections are used for movement, cell movement, and moving particles around its environment. Next slide, please. This is a cross-section of the cell. This is a chemical plant called the Golgi body. This is what we call the rough endoplasmic reticulum, or membrane. And this is a lysosome. A lysosome's function is to take all the waste matter from the cell and recycle it and make it a reusable chemical for the chemical plant again. What interesting thing we learned just in the last few years, that the chemical plant can package a certain kind of secretory products, and it'll put a package around, just like a shipping department, you know, it'll put a package around it, and it will send it out to the outer membrane. And when it gets to the outer membrane, it sheds its outer coat. It sheds the package, the packing material, and it leaves the cell. And it picks up its coat from the outer membrane. What happens to the package it was in? Well, the cell brings it back to the chemical plant and recycles it, uses it again for another package. Talk about efficiency. And they say it all happened by evolution. It just happens. Flipping coins. The next slide, please. These are red blood cells. All of these are red blood cells. This is a white blood cell. The red blood cells, you know, God said to Moses, the life of the flesh is in the blood. These have the responsibility of carrying the oxygen from the air through your body to the rest of the cells. They have more responsibility than that. The next slide, please. It's been learned in the last decade. This is a red blood cell. This is a red blood cell. You notice how concave they are? In the concavity of the red blood cell is a set of microprocessors. And their function is to remember what diseases you had as a child. And when you're invaded with that same organism again, when you're an adult, immediately these microprocessors signal the cells, the specific cells, that are involved with your immunity. And they start building antibodies to protect you. This is an organization of tissue, connective tissue. This is a fat cell. See how ugly it is? And these cells associate, you know, one with another. Next slide, please. These cells communicate. These cells can join together. Living cells can join together and communicate. And these are called the desmosomes. They are junctions for communication. The next slide, please. Now, from microscopy, it has been determined that this is what exists at the communication point. This represents a communicating membrane of two cells. They're actual sieving strands, just like we put reinforcing rods in cement that lock these cells together. And they support the cells at these junctions. And then there are microtubules. And these microtubules are for the plumbing part of the cell. And they pump liquid back and forth, nutrients back and forth to their adjacent cells. The next slide, please. Now, this is a diagram to show you how simple, again, God has made things. Using light. God is light, and He uses light. He uses physical light energy to supply the energy that cells need. And cells can perform four different types of work. Electrical, hydraulic or osmotic work, chemical, and mechanical. The next slide, please. This is a nerve cell, an artist drawing of a nerve cell. This nerve can send signals out. It can receive signals. It can decipher that information, transduce it, and send it back to another point. They actually function electrically. They function just like our computers. As a matter of fact, the concept of the computer is taken from this. It's a binary circuit. Go or no go. Stop or go. The next slide, please. This is a cross-section of intestine. These cells, these intestinal cells, have little microtubules up here in those microvillar projections, those membrane projections. They actually receive liquid from the intestine and pump it back through the cell. And then they sort it out in the cell. And they decide what is good for the body and what isn't good for the body. They reject the unwanted, for example, the metals that you digest. They will reject them. And then they will transport the others back to the bloodstream. And they'll be carried out into the body. So they perform a mechanical work, a chemical work, and electrical work. Next slide, please. This is a part of a molecule in the cell. This is a protein molecule. The cell has over 3,000 of these. And the protein molecules in our body are in each body is different. No two living organisms have the same. You know, we used to say the body was worth 98 cents when you ashed the body. The ashes were worth 98 cents. With the knowledge we have today of what the body is composed of, the body's worth over $1 million. These proteins perform a chemical function. But notice the organization. This is a spatial relationship. In the micro world, just as the organization of nebulae in the macro world. And there are interstellar forces at this point, the same as there are in the macro world. Now the Lord
simplified it again.
He used these molecules to form only four types of organic or living matter.
There are only four types of living matter.
One is carbohydrates.
One is fats.
One is protein, and one are the nucleic acids.
However, the variety of compounds that they can form are endless. But that's the way God does it. It's just very simple, isn't it?
Next slide, please. This is an artist's diagram of a nerve cell performing a mechanical work. A nerve cell can actually wind the insulation around the nerve.
It's called myelin. It has a dielectric value of 5,000 volts per square centimeter.
But in the case of multiple sclerosis, these cells unwind the insulation. And that's why there's pain associated with multiple sclerosis.
The point we're making is these cells can do mechanical work also.
And we can see it happen under the microscope. The next slide, please. This is an organization of tissue. Maybe some of you will recognize it. It's lung tissue. These are myriads of living cells organized to perform a function. The next slide, please. This is coal dust that has invaded the lung cell. The next slide, please. This is how the lung looks under the microscope in a cross-section of the tissue. These are the air spaces. These are the lining cells of those air spaces, which absorb the air and bring it into the bloodstream so that it can serve the rest of the body. But also it forms a mechanical function. It excretes the particles that you inhale, the particles of dust, down to about 2 micron. It will expel all particles above the size of 2 micron. It secretes a lubricant, which is, there's nothing like it in the world. It's called surfactant. Scientists have been trying to duplicate it because there's no lubricant like surfactant. And this surfactant enables the lung to work these cells back out of the body. Next slide, please. Some of these cells, however, they will actually phagocytize or ingest some of these particles, the smaller particles. And here you see a piece of silica inside of a lung, a single lung cell. This is the microanalysis telling us what the composition of that silica is. I bring this out for a point. That now we can not only walk into the cell, we can walk into the cell and look around. And we can actually start, you know, set up a chemical lab here and start analyzing what the composition of these materials are. That's the micro world. It's the same as if you took a spaceship out into the macro world and traveled around and studied the planets. I'll stop there. Next slide, please. There are smaller particles than living cells, but they can't live by themselves. This represents the pneumonia virus, the influenza virus. This is a diameter of 700,000 times. This represents the tobacco mosaic virus. This is how it would look under the microscope. This is how it looks reconstructed. The next slide, please. This is the influenza virus, redrawn by an artist. There's a charge on each one of these tentacles. If you want to deal with this virus and work with it, you have to discharge or neutralize that charge. The next slide, please. This represents a tobacco mosaic virus. It lands on a cell, it sends this probe, injects it into the cell,
and injects its chemicals, its code for survival, into that cell, and that goes into the nucleus, the brain of the cell, and it tells the brain of the cell, now start preparing chemicals for me. And the cell does. The next slide, please. Is there much difference between this satellite probe and that virus? Not much difference at all. We went up there to the moon and we stuck a probe into the moon and we took a piece of that moon and analyzed what it was by X-ray and sent the information back to Earth. Light. You know, most of the instrumentation, 70% of analytical instrumentation today uses light or light energy or energy of some form, wave energy of some form. It's all very simple in the end. Next slide, please. Now, this is a picture, X-ray picture, of an oak tree leaf. And these are the different cells in the oak tree leaf. These little particles are opal particles, and they will begin to solidify from the spring of the year to the fall of the year as the oak tree ages. The next slide, please. This is blue-stemmed grass. The same thing happens in all vegetation, so that these little cells then, by the time that they're all brown and brittle, they're filled solidly with opal. If you pull a green grass blade through your lips and cut your lips, what is it? It's the crystal opal cutting your lip. But this transformation occurs from monosilicic acid, which is a result of light energy acting upon the cell. The same thing happens in part in aging of animal cells. As our body cells get older, they get more brittle on the membrane. Next slide, please. This looks like a picture of stellar bodies, doesn't it? This happens to be a piece of kidney. The microtubules in the kidney have become clogged with calcium. So the tissue is removed, and what remains is the calcium in the kidney. All right, the next slide, please. This is a cross-section of an artery that has developed. This animal had a calcium problem, a thyroid problem, and it developed a calcification on the inner wall. But look at that for a minute. Now look at the next slide. It resembles this black hole. This is a black hole out in space. This is what you see with a telescope. These black holes are magnetic bodies, which are so strong magnetically that they attract light to them. They bend light to them. Now, this is an interesting property of light, that it will be affected by magnetic forces. The next slide, please. This is the analysis of that arterial wall. This was measured, this calcium and phosphor was measured to 18 decimal places. 18 decimal places. Now, why do I bring this up? For this reason. I've been impressed how man is in the middle of the universe. How that if we go to the micro world, it's almost endless, isn't it? And if we go to the macro world, it's endless. We are right in the middle. Because we are in the middle, with light, with physical light, we can learn about it and appreciate it. With the light of truth, we can learn about it and appreciate it. But suppose we were an electron or a molecule. We couldn't appreciate a man, could we? Or if we were a nebulae, we couldn't appreciate a man. You see the marvelous position the Lord has given us? He's put us in a position
where we can understand both ends of his universe. The next slide, please. This is a nebulae. Notice the thousands and millions, actually millions of suns. The next slide, please. This is lung tissue. The relative spaces here in the lung tissue, this is silica in the lung. This animal breathed in a lot of silica. The organics were removed so that the silica could be seen. But the relative distances here under the microscope are the relative distances under the telescope. It's a wonderful world that we're in. Next slide, please. This is lung with silica in it. This is lung tissue with silica in it. Notice the little suns of silica here. The next slide, please. And this is a nebulae. Again, look at the similarity between this and its suns and the lung and its suns of silica. Very comparable, aren't they? And relative distance is about the same. The next slide, please. I'm sure you all recognize this. Pleiades, that's right, the Pleiades. Remember what God said to Job in the 38th chapter of Job? Canst thou bind the sweet influence of the Pleiades? And we think the influence of the Pleiades is not only God as light. We think through this question to Job here, that God is telling us that this must be where his throne is. It originally was thought that the Pleiades was the center of the universe. Since then, we have learned that it is not the center of the universe. However, he said, can you bind the sweet influence of the Pleiades? I think that he's telling us that there is a force from the Pleiades, an energy force, physical, as well as God himself and his holy power and influence. When God created, we know that he used his holy power, his influence in creation on both animate and inanimate objects. Okay, the next slide, please. He goes on to say, or can you loose the bands of Orion? This is Orion in the Pleiades. Look at all the suns it has. Can you loose the bands of Orion? Why would he say that? I have a suggestion why he said that. You may not accept it. You may think it's a little bit wacky, but that's all right. The next slide, please. This is the Horsehead Nebula in Orion, inside of Orion. This is the famous Horsehead Nebula. What does horses stand for in the scriptures? Doctrine, don't they? To me, I think God is saying that there is a universal law. There is a standard regulation and rule throughout the universe. Just like we are admonished through the scriptures to be sound in the truth, sound in doctrine, follow those rules. So I think there is universal law. It's the basic, the standard law of the universe. And it's really symbolized in the Horsehead Nebula of Orion. The next slide, please. Now, God used light in the tabernacle. You remember? The supernatural light in the tabernacle was the Shekinah light, wasn't it? And he spoke to Aaron the high priest by the Urim and the Thummim, using the supernatural light as it affected the 12 jewels on a breastplate. And each one of these jewels related to a tribe of Israel. And the name of this jewel and the name of their tribe suggest an element of character. And so we think symbolically This represents, in the Melchizedek priesthood, this represents the 12 elements of character that this great Melchizedek priesthood will have. And how was it brought about? By light. Physical light here, but spiritual light, the light of truth. In developing the new creation, it's this light of truth that develops a new creation. And it's through the light of truth that we come to an understanding of how God uses physical light in his creative works. The next line, please. You remember it was said of our Lord in John 1, he was the life, he was the light, he was the life and the light of men. So think about that for a minute. He was the light of men. He brought light into a dark earth. But he also brought life into a dark earth. He has been our light and our life. And that same light and power, energy, will bring forth the Son of Righteousness, that will have healing in its beams, that will regenerate the whole mass of humanity, and it will open their blind eyes and unstop their deaf ears. It will be the light to their minds. It will be the illumination. It will be life and light to them. And we will be a part of that great sun, S-U-N and S-O-N, that illuminates the earth. It was even recognized in Grecian mythology. Prometheus told of the coming of a Redeemer who would bring down regeneration of life from heaven to men. We look forward to that time. In the next slide, please. They will bring the restitution of life. Not only will they restore mankind, but the literal earth will be restored as a habitation for this perfected society. The next slide, please. Next slide, please. In Ephesians 2, we are told that the church will be the luminaries of the universe throughout the ages to come. Throughout the ages to come, he will show forth his exceeding greatness and kindness toward us by Christ Jesus. He took a group of humanity from the dregs of society, and he made them the luminaries of the universe. And if faithful, we'll have the opportunity to bring light and life to universal creation in the future. May the Lord add his blessing.
Somebody put the lights on in the back, the two on the left, please.
Thank you, Brother Owen. I think you've got a lot more. It's fascinating. We've learned a little more about the Creator, and we've also learned a little bit, at least I have, about myself. We just want to make an announcement for those of you who haven't been here. The rear door back there is for the ladies' restroom. There's also a door as you go through this hall. To the left is for the ladies, and to the right is for the gentlemen. So there's two for the ladies and one for the men.
Our Holy Father, the Father of lights, in whom we live and have our being, we come to thee with thankful hearts, grateful that thou hast opened our minds to thy plans and purposes. We thank thee for thy eternal goodness. We thank thee for Christ our Redeemer. And we thank thee for the promises that we have, the faithful, to be luminaries, servants of thine, giving life to others. We pray thy blessing upon the word spoken, as thou seest good. We pray thy blessing upon the ensuing activities of the convention. May it be a means of blessing and helping and strengthening us, each and every one. We seek forgiveness of our shortcomings and commit everything unto thee. In Jesus' name, amen.